Welcome, everybody. This is Mordechai Plotzker, and welcome to the nightly share, shareenjoyment.com. Tonight's share is a recap on Parshas Vayera, and the topic is, It's Just Not Fair. So I'd like to try to get into a question that I've been thinking about for many years and see how we can work together to resolve it. The end of the Parsha has the discussion of Vayugal Avram Lemor, Hine Yolda Ben L'Nachar Achicha. This has nothing at all to do with the Akedah. Spent the whole parsha talking about the focal point being Akedas Yitzchak. So question number one is, why is it called Akedas Yitzchak and not Akedas Avraham? We can strengthen the question by saying, it was Espinchas Yichidcha Shahabta Es Yitzchak, four levels of endearment to Avraham Avinu. Ki bi Yitzchak Yikar L'chazara, through Yitzchak you will have your future. And yet, with the flick of a wrist, it all could have ended. How hesitant Avraham must have been. But yet, he fulfilled the mission. And yet, it still was not given full credit. He wasn't given full credit in the sense that it could have been called Akedas Avraham. The focal point goes toward Yitzchak. The question is, why? The answer that Chassam Sofer provides is that it was Avraham that heard the mission from God, not Yitzchak. Yitzchak could have said, Abba, you're getting a little bit old. You know, you heard about this Mila business. You went ahead and did it on yourself. And now, you heard about this idea of taking me to Har Moriah or some long trip that we're going to be going on. Maybe you didn't hear it correctly. Maybe it was meant for someone else. Maybe it was meant for my brother, Yishmael. How do you know it's meant for me? And so because Yitzchak, when he asked his father, where are we going? The pasuk begins by saying, Vayechu Shneim Yachtav. And then when Avraham Avinu answers and says, Elokim Yer Aloha Sabini, Hashem's going to show us what's going to be. Hashem's going to show us where the sacrifice will be and what exactly it will entail. This gave Yitzchak perhaps some comfort or discomfort. And despite the fact that he could have asked a lot of questions to question why am I going with you alone while you're carrying that knife, he didn't ask any questions. The strength of sacrifice was born on Yitzchak's shoulders. Literally. And that's why it's called Akedas Yitzchak, because he listened to his father and he didn't ask any questions. And he was, as they say in Yiddish, still a hate. He went quietly and did not ask any questions, didn't complain, and didn't do anything to the contrary. He was an Akedas Yitzchak. He was willing to go because he understood that if his father heard this command, it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he wasn't going to challenge it. That is why Yitzchak was so great. He was fearless in the face of death. So that's why, as great as it was for Avraham Avinu to take his son, the sacrifice was really born on the shoulders of Yitzchak. Now we turn to the next question, which is that the end of the parsha, the Maftir, provides us with a narrative of this brother of Avraham, one of the three brothers, right? We know that Haran was the one who passed away when he jumped into the Kibshon HaEish following Avraham Avinu. That in itself is a discussion within itself, because I have a long drata on that, but I'm not able to do that tonight because of limitation of time. And of course, we know from Haran came Lot, and from Lot came Balak, and from Balak came Eglon, and from Eglon came Rus, and from Rus comes David HaMelech. So we know that the progenitor of Klal Yisrael, the future Mashiach, is going to come from Lot, and that sourced back to his father. And so we know that there's a concept there, Apishnaim Edim Yakum Davar, on account of two witnesses, you establish a new precedent, which is, Es Anev Shasher Asu B'Haran, said my father, Hashem, don't read Haran, but rather through Haran, because it's only a drop of ink that separates a hay from a ches. And so it was through the sacrifice of Haran that Avraham Avinu became a name, and such a name that Nimrod was not comfortable having Avram anywhere near his midst, and Avram's life was in danger. Nimrod had gotten the name because he was Moreh B'Malchus as a Medrash Rabbah. He believed himself to be a deity, and that's the reason why he was very dangerous. But that's a sidebar discussion. What I'm trying to focus on is what was said to Avram, what is the relationship to the Akedah? There is none. There is no relationship to the Akedah. But what was said to Avram was that, you know, your brother Nachar, he's got a nice big family. He's got eight kids. Not only that, he's got four more from a concubine, the last of which is called Ma'aka. So what is Avram supposed to do with this information? The Torah doesn't tell us anything in terms of his response. In fact, you hear nothing. And the question you can ask very strong is it's just not fair. I spent my whole life, says Avraham Avinu, since I was 75 and I had to leave Or Kasdim and then go on this trip and be tested through my wife being imprisoned and then doubting for the people that took her captive, that they should be able to have children, to all of the Asar Nisyonos that Avraham Avinu went through, culminating with the Akedah, which is perhaps the most difficult of all challenges. My brother, he's not challenged at all, lives the life of Riley, smokes on Shabbos, drives a car on Shabbos, does whatever he wants, and is never tested, and he's got a beautiful, large family. It's just not fair. Hashem, you know, if you really love me so much, let me be, leave me alone, let me go back to watching or catching up on my Netflix, Hulu, whatever it is, just let me be. I'm not interested in being tested like this. If you love me so much, give me a little bit of a breather. And yet Avraham Avinu was not like that at all. We see that Avraham Avinu did not complain at all to Hashem when he had every reason to say something. Instead, he said nothing. It says, "Vayugal la'Avraham le'mar," and he doesn't respond. And who was the individual that told over this information to Avraham that his brother is doing so well and that Avraham Avinu almost lost his son? We know that Ki v'Yitzchak yikar l'chazara, everything is riding on Yitzchak. With the flick of a wrist, Yitzchak could have, his life could have ended. And we don't see any challenge by Nachar. And so the question that we have to ask ourselves is, Avraham Avinu had every opportunity to say something and he didn't. Why didn't he? And what is the message? And before we give this answer, we have to transcend into Parshas Chayesara. Because we know that this same Pallet, whose name is Og Melech HaBashan, was the one who told this information over to Avraham Avinu. And it wasn't just Avraham Avinu. Before we get to Sarah Imenu, we know that where did he come from? It says in the Pasuk, Vayisha'er Ach Noach, says the Dasakinu and Parshas Balak, that the word Ach is 21, Aleph and Chav, so this is 21, and Noach is 58, you get 79 if you add the two together. Og is the Gematria of 79. Aleph, Vav, Gimel, 79. So where did, and how did he survive? He survived by holding on to the outside of the Teva while it was going through a cataclysmic type of water washing and for 40 days and 40 nights. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he had to fight against Og, he turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be successful over here. Hashem says, you'll be successful. But here's a guy who preceded Avraham Avinu by 10 generations. And Avraham Avinu, you know, didn't take him out. How does Moshe Rabbeinu feel confident taking him out? Hashem says, you'll be successful. And sure enough, he was. And so the epilogue now reverts back to the prologue. How do we understand what exactly is happening over here with this messaging? And then we move into this week's parsha. We know that Chayesara, that Sarah Imenu, passes away. How did she pass away? Why did she pass away? Because someone told her that, hey, did you notice that your husband and son, Yitzchak, and Yishmael and Eliezer have been away for a couple of days. Yes, I realized they've been away for a couple of days. I packed them up on a journey a while back, and I made sure. We say this every Friday night. Every beautiful Shabbos Friday night, we sing this to our beloved Eshet Chayil, to the mother in our house, to the wife in our house, to the daughter in our house, to the future mommies in our house, to the grandmothers, to the bubbies. We sing this beautiful shir, this beautiful song. And it's in remembrance, this is the Hesped that Avraham Avinu wrote for Sarah Imenu, which we'll get to next week. And it's fascinating because Shlomo HaMelech codified this in Perek Lamed Aleph in one of his beautiful manuscripts. And so we know that this is one of the psukim that refers to Sarah Imenu. And it says, that she woke up in the middle of the night and she made sure that everyone had provisions for the journey. So that when Bayashkim Avram Babuker, when Avraham Avinu did get up in the morning, he was able to go right away without any delay. Because if you think about it, he would have to pack a lot of sandwiches. This one likes tuna fish. This one likes peanut butter and jelly. This one wants a steak sandwich. Everyone's got their own cup of tea. And yet Avraham Avinu went on his way because how and why? Sarah Imenu was there providing the necessary resources so that Avraham Avinu can hasten his departure and to fulfill the will of Hashem. And so we see something powerful about Sarayimenu, and we see that it's Og Melech HaBashan that tells over this narrative to Sarayimenu and says, hey, did you also take note of the fact that there's something missing from your kitchen, like a big knife? Yes, actually, I did notice that. And then Og slowly revealed over that, I think your son is gone. I think your son was taken as a sacrifice by your beloved husband, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? Because it was your husband that was telling everybody not to throw their children into the fire of Molech and sacrifice them. Here your husband is going ahead and doing something quite egregious, wouldn't you agree, by taking your son to this Mount Moriah where he's going to be sacrificed on the altar? Sarayimenu couldn't handle it, and she passed away. Now, if I were writing a comic book, or if I were writing a movie, if I were writing anything, I would say Avraham Avinu is a man of kindness, but he is also a man who can mete out justice. And Og deserved justice. But yet we don't find that Avraham Avinu ever went head-to-head with Og. He kind of let him go, and he let him pass. And Og went on his way and did what he did until he met up later on with Moshe Rabbeinu, who took him out. But for the time being, while we're discussing this narrative, it is quite troubling to strengthen the question, what was Avraham's proper response to Og? And the answer is nothing. And we don't see any response. So the question is, what should our response be? There's one explanation that I heard from Rabbi Eli Mansour, and then there's the Chiddush I'd like to share on top of his explanation, which is that throughout life we know that Tola Eretz Al Blima, that the earth hangs still for those who say nothing. Right? What does that mean? That means that Tola Eretz Al Blima, that there's two ways to understand that pasuk from Eov. One is to say that if you look at the earth oscillating around the sun, you would say we're moving even though we're grounded, and that is a miracle. Right? So the earth hangs still in the balance. It's just by gravity and the gravity pull around the sun, the orbit. The other way of explaining this is that it's Tola Eretz Al Blima, that the earth hangs still in deference to those who say nothing, and there's a source for this in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Vav. And I know that because that was the daf when my father was Nifter, I believe that was the daf that they were learning at the time. And it was very true of my father because he was a very quiet person, very unassuming. It is the people that complain. If Avraham Avinu would have complained at that point to Hashem in front of Yitzchak and in front of everybody, in front of the world, if he would have raised the complaint right then and there, it's just not fair, and said those words, then perhaps the Torah would have ended, God forbid. We never would have had a Chai Yisara. We never would have had a Toldos. We never would have had the other books, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Why? Because Shver Shazani Yid, right? When the Jewish people said, when they came right before they docked in Ellis Island, they threw their tefillin over the ship. And when some people came and they saw how difficult it was to keep kashrus and how difficult it was to keep Shabbos, and that's why there's a shul in Barapur called Shomer Shabbos. Why? Because those are the people that actually kept Shabbos on Shabbos. And then there was early minyanim, so that sometimes on Shabbos morning, there was a minyan early on so that people can daven at 7 and then get to work at 8:30 on Shabbos day, because that's how difficult it was for those people, our grandparents and great-grandparents. So much sacrifice went into keeping a Shomer Shabbos home. It is unheard of. What we have today are luxuries that we take as granted. We don't realize how much sacrifice went in many generations prior to ours in order for us to keep a kosher home, in order for us to keep a kosher family in terms of Shmirah Shabbos and Taras HaMashpacha, and when it came to, you know, making sure that everything that was brought into the house was just as kosher as everything found outside the house. These were tremendous challenges, and not everyone survived. And so many of us, 90% of our brothers fell off, and they're no longer religious. They've gone elsewhere. The few, the core, are still holding on tight. And it's those people that are able to say a bracha even in the face of challenge. We know that when things are going well for us, we say Baruch HaTov V'Hametiv. When we get a promotion, when we hear about a birth of a child, a grandchild, when we hear about a Besura Tova, we say Baruch HaTov V'Hametiv. We say Baruch Hashem for everything. To the contrary, and no one should ever know from this, when we hear things that are less fortunate, we say Baruch Dayan HaEmes. We should never have to say those three words. We should rather just keep it to two words. Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv. Also three words. But we should only keep those first three words and not the latter three. But whatever it is in life, we are always thanking Hashem. And even when a person says Yiskadal the Yiskadash, right, and it's a yard site or, you know, whatever it is, a person saying Kaddish, a person is recognizes that I am, think about the words, Yiskadal the Yiskadash, that the name of Hashem should be enhanced, should be sanctified. No matter what it is that a person undergoes, the person is thinking Hashem. And it's so powerful to think like this. But it's only how we are. We are a very unique people. We're constantly praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we live life like this, then we're able to survive. But if we complain outright to God, then there's a good chance that that complaint will be heard. Not only by ourselves, our neshama will take it very close, but those surrounding us will as well, and say that if it's so difficult for my father to keep the Shabbos, because he's being let go all the time, and there's no food on the table, and it's so difficult for us to keep a kosher home, and all the requirements that come with it, then many other children in the next generation will not keep it as well. Because if it's difficult for a parent, how much more so for a child who's dependent upon the parent? So the messaging has to be very delicate. And my mother, should be well, has a beautiful little sign on the refrigerator at home when I was growing up. It said, a smart person knows what to say. A wise person knows whether or not to say it. And that's really the challenge of a parent. We often take stock of what we see around us, but we have to also understand how to communicate it. The next level of understanding is crying. Crying is also a response. It's a nonverbal response, but it has such a strong cataclysmic effect on those, especially the individual. It may be even not so much the people surrounding. How often and how comfortable are we crying in shul? How often are we comfortable crying by ourselves? When I was a little boy and when I lost my grandmother and I was a little kid, I cried. I didn't see too many other people crying. But when I cried, then other people cried too, because I think that it's a natural response. But people are just afraid to cry. They're afraid to let their emotions come out. They're afraid to let their wail come out, that big cry. We know that Rachel Mavaka al Baneha, and you know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is listening to Rachel Imenu. Hashem is listening. Kol Mavasa, Mavasa Ve'Omer. This is a call that constantly is at HaKadosh Baruch Hu's side. So for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, Rachel Imenu is always crying because she sacrificed so much during her lifetime, even to be buried on the side of a dirt road, not to be buried eternally next to her husband, her beloved husband Yaakov, so as not to embarrass her sister Leah. And that speaks untold volumes about sacrifice. Don't tell me about sacrifice, Rachel Imenu says. I know full well about what sacrifice looks like. I'm buried over here in Beit Lechem, and everyone else is buried in Hebron, which is where I would rather be. And Rachel is there in order to give comfort to everyone else that goes through challenges and difficult times. There's someone that you can speak to, someone who understands you, Rachel Imenu. And so when we cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not comfortable to cry in shul. It's not comfortable to cry to other people. But let's take a look, for example, and give some examples, what I think really message home a success story, which is Haktah Kasa Ba'elai, that this little girl who was giving out food to the people in Sodom and Gomorrah that were destitute and hungry, when they found out that this girl was doing this, and Medrash brings down it could have been Lot's daughter, they tarred and feathered her, and she cried out, and she died like this. And when she cried out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's enough. That's enough for me. Whether there's 50 people, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, doesn't make a difference because they're all gone. There's no way that I'm going to let this little girl's voice be silenced. I'm going to react. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to listen when we cry. When the Jewish people cried, "Vanitzak el Hashem," when we cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. When Sari Imenu was crying because she wanted to have children, but recognizing, of course, the pain of others that were unable to have children as well, davening for them is what enabled Sari Imenu to have children of her own. And so Chazal bring down the famous thing, "Kol Mavakish Davar, V'hu Tzarech Lo Sa Davar." If we daven for somebody else, then they need the same thing. Unei Metzchila. Then that person is answered first. Why? Because you're davening for someone else. And when you're crying for someone else, there's such a power in that cry. So, Vanitzak al Hashem, Haktak, Asabai Eli, whenever it is that a Jewish person cries, that's when they are listened to. And Chazal bring down that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when a person cries, they're being judged. I heard this from Rabbi Eli Mansour as well, from a shir Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Rosh Hashanah, I forget which one it was. And I don't remember when I heard it. But I was thinking a lot about that. I'm not sure if that's when they're judged. Letova, I think that's when they're answered. I think that is when the Bakasha really goes up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you want to know how a person's judgment will be, if you see that person crying, you know that they're going to be judged. And it's going to be a favorable judgment, because there's no one that sees someone crying that does not feel the pain of somebody else, wants to cry too. Because your pain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Imo Anochi Batzara, I am also together with you in the same way that you are having a simcha, a mesameach with you. Imo Anochi Batzara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. He's a silent partner in our success stories. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a silent partner with us whenever it is that we face adversity and challenge. And this, I believe, in conclusion, is the only way HaKadosh Baruch Hu manifests his existence here on earth, through people that cry. Because for everyone else, it's, I want a bigger house, I need a bigger car, I want a bigger steak. Everything has to be bigger than the guy next door and more magnificent. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all right, but what about me? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'yasu li mikdash v'shachanti v'socham. All I want is to feel comfortable in your house. The only way I can feel comfortable in your house is if you speak to me. You can speak to me through tefillah, right? And tefillah is one of the major mechanisms for connection. And I was actually listening to a shiur by Rav Melech Biderman. He said that tefillah is Rosh Hashanah for Trufas Pela Liyehudi Hamamin, a wondrous remedy for a yid that believes. That is tefillah. So a person has to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when a person davens Hashem, after a person finishes davening, or even while a person is davening, it is perfectly acceptable to cry. And when a person cries, that's when the tefillos go even higher, and they have so much greater power and meaning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here's a person who's crying out to me. When a yasom ve'almana yodeid, that when we have to sustain them, that means that the yasom doesn't have a father, doesn't have, God forbid, a parent to cry out to. And so therefore the yasom cries out to Hashem. Hashem becomes the father. Hashem listens to the child. And sometimes we forget. And we think that the yasom is a little child, a little boy, a little girl, God forbid. But these are also people that are much older. They could be in their 70s, in their 80s, 90s, 100s. They're children of someone else. And they also need help. They also need attention. They also need support. And that's why we have so many rules surrounding Kibud Av V'Em. And of course, Saba and Safta and Grandma and Grandpa. All of these rules are meant to reinforce the fidelity that we have toward aged parents, because they too are children of parents. And they too need the support of a child sometimes as an adult. We have to remember them. And then we have to care for them. And I think that the messaging over here tonight is that Avraham Avinu did not respond verbally. It says in this week's parasha, in Parshas Chayesara, that he came to make a hesped. The hesped was Esh Hachayil, and that perhaps could be a whole shir. The next word, it says Velivkosa, and then he cried, which is an interesting twist on what I'm saying tonight, because he's crying after the fact. He's crying after the fact, but Rashi says Ma'at Ma'at, only a little bit, because Manda Hava Hava, because there was already. Avinu was not allowed to cry much more than that. Chazal actually bring down halachas that a person should not rip their hair out, a person should not extend themselves too heavily in mourning. All of these things are meant for the mental health and well-being of an individual, which is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very much concerned about as well. I gave a share on psychological freedom during Pesach. That's something that always could be revisited. But it's simply the messaging of non-verbal communication can be just as effective as verbal communication. We just have to recognize how to make it most appropriate and how to make it most meaningful. I want to wish everyone a successful week. Bracha v'atzlacha. This is Mordechai Plotzker. Thank you so much for joining, and thank you very much for listening.